You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 14th of March 2015 on Monocle 24. Daily newspapers seek international alliances to strengthen their print output. French and German news weeklies grapple with national scandals, and an Italian classic launches a redesign. From Madrid to Rome and via Hamburg, Paris and Zurich, a trans-European express of a show today on The Stack. We leaf through a selection of weekly news magazines, including L'Express, Die Zeit, Stern and L'Espresso, and discover the winning formula that means that the weekly, rather than the daily, is the lifeblood of European print. Plus, we find out why some of the continent's biggest and most respected newspapers are joining forces.
We want to help our companies to thrive in this 21st century media landscape, but we also want to have fun. It's going to help us bond together.
And we go to Zurich, where a high-end supplement puts a new spin on luxury.
We actually are the first lifestyle magazine, I think, in Switzerland at least, that really manages to give the optical and the haptic touch of a magazine.
That and plenty more besides today on The Stack, Monocle's dedicated print industry review and analysis programme. Hello and welcome to The Stack on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards. To start, let's go to Madrid. It's a question that we've asked many a time here on the programme. Can newspapers survive? The hurdles are familiar. An increasingly complicated media landscape, constant challenges from the digital realm and declining revenue, all shaping an existential threat. However, a new initiative, the leading European Newspaper Alliance, is hoping to launch an offensive of sorts. Spearheaded by Javier Moreno, ex-editor-in-chief of Spain's El País, the alliance is embracing a safety-in-numbers approach, banding together seven European newspapers, including Le Figaro, La Repubblica and the Tribune de Genève, in a formal alliance which will see collaborative investigative reporting, the sharing of digital innovation technology and even reporter exchange programmes. So is this the glimmer of hope newspaper editors around the world have been waiting for? Well, our Madrid correspondent, Liam Aldous, sat down with Javier Moreno at his home in Madrid to find out whether the alliance is indeed a game changer.
I don't think you can get more than three editors-in-chief these days in the Western world without having a somber atmosphere, to say the least. And I would even say that this is an understatement of how that meeting was. We were friends and it was happy and it was fun, but obviously we were all worried about the future of the newspapers themselves, I mean the newspaper industry. But, well, by the end of the dinner, the Swiss publisher Pietro Supino, who has been really the driving force behind this agreement, said, well, at some point down the road, the publishers should come to this meeting, if we have another meeting, and because we should try to build something out of what we've discussed today here, not just exchanging already existing content, but trying to go beyond that. And by the end of September, we had already a project, and it took some months of, like always, when you have seven newspapers in six countries in four different languages, it's not easy. And by the way, one thing I've already learned is never criticize again the European Commission, the European Council, or any other multilateral organization for not achieving their goals in time.
Looking ahead towards the future, what exactly will the alliance mean for the quality of reportage and also the way readers get their news?
Well, in the next few weeks and months, readers from these seven newspapers will notice that in their paper every day. We already have built a platform where we already upload content from all seven newspapers. Then editors can have a look at it and choose what they deem fit for their or interesting for their readers, for the newspapers. Another project would be to publish at the same time big stories, big interviews, special features, conversation among international leaders, things which would be otherwise very difficult to achieve for a single newspaper. But we think that with seven big European newspapers behind are, would say, feasible enough, and that's something we can accomplish.
Is this spirit of collaboration simply the next logical step following the investigative collaborations like the ones we saw with WikiLeaks and the Edward Snowden leaks?
Well, obviously that was in everyone's mind when we started this project. I was editor-in-chief of El País when WikiLeaks broke, and I was in the middle of this process of bringing the story about with many newspapers in both sides of the Atlantic. So it was, again, not easy collaboration among different newspapers in different languages with different cultures, even in different time zones. But we joined forces, and I think we produced first-rate roast of stories which showed that joining forces is a meaningful way to enhance the quality of journalism. Quality journalism is expensive, it's not an easy thing, and joining forces, pooling resources, the way we plan to do, will prove very useful.
One thing that caught my eye in the detail is this exchange program for journalists, kind of an Erasmus for European journalists, I guess. Can you tell me a bit more about this?
Yeah, well, that's the fun part of it. We want to help our companies to thrive in this 21st century media landscape, but we also want to have fun. I mean, it's not just fun, because it's going to help us bond together.
That was our Madrid correspondent, Liam Alder, speaking to Javier Moreno, former editor-in-chief of El País. You're listening to The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. As promised at the top of the show, we're going to have a maxi Euro News magazine review today. A look at the stories and spreads that have made it to print this week across the continent. For the French titles, we're joined by London correspondent for France 24, Bénédicte Paviot. Then we cross the Rhine to have Die Zeit's Imke Henkel from Germany, before flying down over the Alps to Italy and our very own David Pleasant for the weekly magazines there. Welcome, all of you, to The Stack. Great
Hello.
To have you with
Hello.
Us on the programme. Bénédicte, perhaps we'll start with you. Let's cross the channel, first of all. Is it a question of one story that's really dominating the weekly magazine marketplace this week in France, or is it a usual mixed bag?
It's a bit of a mixed bag, but one of the interesting stories that does get quite a lot of coverage, particularly in L'Express, but also in another magazine, is about how fed up the French are about feeling really overburdened by taxes, particularly under the socialist government, but it had already started under Nicolas Sarkozy. So indeed, it's called Impôts, la grande révolte, taxes, the big revolution. And French people do feel overburdened, really, by all kinds of taxes, old ones, new ones, ones that are going to be introduced. And interestingly, they've got different ways of either aggressively avoiding, as individuals, paying their taxes, or indeed companies as well. So one of the ways the companies do it is by actually keeping the hours that people work to 35 hours. Another way that individuals do it is not declare the fact that they have a cleaner, a window cleaner, or somebody looking after their children, so they're paying people on the black market, etc. And they really feel, French people think that it's okay to do this. And so the French government response is twofold. Number one, it's to say, right, we're going to crack down on you because this is absolutely unacceptable. But then there's another, I think, more interesting side is one of the ministers admits that actually what should be happening is, in fact, that this social model should be better explained to French people of what the taxes are for, where they, you know, what they're used for, and why it is important to actually pay for these things, whether it's roads or hospitals, etc.
Imke, let's come to you next then. Interestingly, there are some reflections on tax in the German news weeklies, but again, the tenor of this coverage is rather different, and well, perhaps some people might say unsurprisingly so. I was still surprised. Tell us about this piece. Is it in Die Zeit magazine?
Yes, that's indeed Zeit magazine. Die Zeit actually chose to make their cover story this week about the inheritance in Germany. There, half of Germans will actually inherit quite a bit of wealth, and that has, among others, of course, the consequence that they will pay inheritance tax, which some of them say, you know what, it's not enough. We should pay more. And there's, for example, the story of one woman. She is an academic, and she didn't even tell most of her friends that she inherited. She put it away in her bank account and left it there. I think only her husband knows about it and very close friends. And she explains, you know, I pay 42% from my regular income and I only pay 25% from the inheritance. And it's not fair. And she said, well, her parents would say we worked hard for it and it is already taxed and so on and so forth. So you can accept it. But she very much feels that this creates a split in the society. And I think that is a very German thing.
Let me just ask you briefly about the appearance of this piece, because it's quite interesting that the art direction on this piece, Insight yes. magazine, tell us about it. It's pretty striking, isn't it?
Yes, you're very right. Actually, they have a picture on the front of the newspaper, which is rather boring, that just shows three very well-dressed up boys. Very good-looking boys, but not... I don't really think anyone, not even people who inherit a lot, would look like that. They have suits and cravats and striped shirts and all the rest of it. But actually, the magazine is far more interesting. They don't show any faces. It just split into black and white. So the top half is black, the second half is white, and that is basically to show this is a split society, half inherits, half doesn't. And the Zeit magazine for some time had the very interesting decision to have two covers. So you open the magazine and there comes another cover, and that is totally black. And it asked, is it actually just to inherit? Ist Erben gerecht? And this actually shows, of course, the half that is totally black, that doesn't inherit. And later on in the magazine, again, they don't show these people who inherit by phaser. The stories, they tell the stories, but they don't show the people. And just the whole visual of this article is black and white.
It's very interesting, isn't it, to do that sort of monochrome approach. And I guess maybe that speaks to the idea of tax. There is sometimes this furtiveness, there's this secrecy and anonymity to it. And it's quite interesting to reflect that graphically. Let me ask you, Benedict, it's quite interesting, considering sort of art direction, when we look through the French weeklies, is there the same willingness there to be rather bold? You know, that's quite a bold editorial decision to do something so arresting like that. Or do you think that they're, I don't know, delivering something a bit more tried and tested maybe to their readers in terms of how they look on the newsstand each week?
No, I think visuals are very important across French society. I mean, the cliché is about fashion, but architecture as well. So, for example, the cover of L'Express is actually, apart from the big word impôt, la grande révolte, taxes, the big revolution, you then get a copy of what French citizens receive, or anybody actually, even if you're not a French citizen, but if you're a French taxpayer, you receive, which is avis d'impôt, and so it has a French flag with liberté, égalité, fraternité on the top of it, and it would be for your home, for paying for your TV, what the French equivalent would be of council tax. That's on the cover of the magazine, and they've put them all together on it. So it's basically showing this idea of all these, this assault really by the French.
A horrifying montage.
Yes, a horrifying montage. Very nice. Summed it up nicely. And at the beginning of the article, you've got the Ministry of Finances with this very striking lightning strike on the top of the Ministry of Finance. So it's like they're going to shell shock you into paying your taxes. So I would say there is an adventurous
tax storm there. Yes. We're going to be hearing more from David Pleasant about the Italian weeklies after a break. But Dave, just quickly, we were talking about sort of monochrome design in some of the German on Die Zeit magazine. And there's another pleasingly, well, again, monochrome with red accents, similarly, in one of the Italian titles you've got.
Exactly. It's an espresso and a financial theme again. So that's a transalpine theme. This is about the waste of the provinces, so provincial government, and how much it's costing the taxpayer in Italy. And yet a very striking monochrome black and white image there. So we'll talk about that in a sec.
Wonderful stuff. That's David Pleasant. Also with me, Benedict Pavio and Imke Henkel here on The Stack.
Broadcasting around the clock from our headquarters at Midori House in London, Monocle 24 is the global radio service of Monocle magazine and a wholly owned subsidiary of Wing Content. With bureau in Tokyo, Hong Kong, Istanbul, Zurich, New York and Toronto, and a network of over 35 correspondents, Monocle 24 is edited by Tyler Brulé, Andrew Tuck, Steve Bloomfield and Tom Edwards. If you have any editorial, programming or advertising inquiries, please contact us at info@monocle.com. Monocle, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
You're listening to The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. Now we head to Switzerland and to the offices of Zurich's leading newspaper, Die Neue Zürcher Zeitung, or NZZ. Although the paper was a pioneer in the Swiss market, launching high-end magazine supplement Z in 2007, it felt it was time again to do something different. NZZ called on the services of our cousins here at Midori House, branding agency Wink Creative. With its inspired design, unique content and premium print quality, the supplement launched last week and is set to become a strong brand of its own. We spoke to Z Magazine's editor Nicole Outhouse, and Monocle's David Pleasant caught up with Wing Creative's Silke Klinert and David Michon.
The Chefredakteur of the NZZ am Sonntag, Felix Müller, was realizing that Switzerland has no lifestyle weekend magazine. He was convinced that what works in England and America could work here too. So he was the first one who actually made a lifestyle magazine for the weekend. And it was immediately a big success. So we started with two issues and to try to see, could we get enough advertisement, enough readers that would be interested. And then in 2007, it was launched definitely. And it was immediately successful and also later was copied by other magazines. So like Tagesanzeiger was coming out with Encore in the same format, more or less in the same actually structure and also the same design. That's why we decided that we have to kind of go a step ahead and make a new magazine. To design a new magazine with the same format that actually is able to go more into the magazine world, and the format is not only, oh, everything is so big, which is very good for the advertiser, but sometimes a little bit hard to find like really good optical photographs that really would match the format. That was one of the big challenges we had to deal with. My favorite is basically the change of paper, that we actually are the first lifestyle magazine, I think, that really, in Switzerland at least, that really manages to give the optical and the haptic touch of a magazine. You have something in your hands that really feels like the paper change and you like to have it in your hands. The second highlight for me is that we finally have real space to go into depth, that we really have space for stories, that we don't not only try to say this is new and this is the trend, but that we really try to explain that's why it's new and that's why it's the trend now. The weekend is probably the time that people really read. The weekend gives you the chance to really sit down and go into depth and also to have fun reading. I think that is the one thing that distinguishes the Sunday papers from the daily papers. Daily papers have the function to inform people, and the Sunday papers also have the function to kind of entertain people. They sit at the table and drink a coffee and read it because they want to read it, not because they have to read it. I think in the future, people really have to think what is working online and what is working print. And daily news, print can never beat online. But for big fashion issues, for like the haptic and also for nice photographic stories, online will never beat the print. And that's what NZZ tries to do.
We have very distinctive sort of categories that have been designed in very distinguished sort of ways. The typography overall, I think, is quite different to what it was before. So it's moving away from, you know, how you often see big headlines over imagery. Actually, we've created a quite unique, slightly reduced typographic style for this, using traditional Swiss type and Swiss fonts, and then also employing beautiful recently designed serif fonts, which is made in Switzerland, which was based on the Times New Roman. So I think it's like looking at the bigger picture in terms of the pacing, but also really focusing on the detail. You know, in the end, it's a lot about the little details that deliver a good magazine.
I was just going to pick up on that point Silke made about it being both Swiss and international. Of course, she's highlighted some places where we've really brought some Swissness into the design. I mean, it's very clean and sophisticated, and there's an excellent use of typography, which is, of course, a Swiss strong point in general. But certainly also in the content, I think it was important to find that balance and to bring into celebrate what Switzerland's very good at.
also from a design point of view, I wanted to add that we wanted to express a view on what luxury is, which is like a new look away from the cliche look of gold and glitz. So I think it was very much about more minimal approach and in photography, much more natural approach. So we followed that throughout the magazine.
That was David Pleasant speaking to Wing Creative's Silke Klinet and David Michon. You're listening to The Stack on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards, in the chair. What a treat for me today. Not two, but three guests. We're talking about the European news weekly scene. Still with me, Imke Henkel, Benedict Pavio, and Monocle's own David Pleasant. David, we were talking a little earlier about L'Espresso. You mentioned this striking cover and some of the other titles you've got there, a little stack of magazines. Let's do a quick sort of covers run through. Anything sort of really jumped out at you at newsstands this week? And does it speak to any, I don't know, wider themes about how people design their covers in the Italian news weekly scene?
Very apt conversation for L'Espresso this week. Actually, L'Espresso has just redesigned and relaunched its magazine. Quite a subtle difference. They've basically changed the banner. So they've also kind of made things a bit more simple. And the editor of L'Espresso, he starts the opener from Luigi Vicinanza is on that subject of the redesign. He's explaining to the readers why they've decided to clean things up a bit. And the cover expresses the way that they want to largen the impact to their readers 60 years after publishing the magazine.
Interesting. Imke, let me cross back to you. I used to work on newspapers myself, and it was always the issue of redesign, always a vexed issue, and you were told, you know, don't change certain things. Here in the UK newspaper scene, it was always, never change the crossword. That was the one thing you could never meddle with, that because you would guarantee you'd lose readers. Amongst the sort of German weeklies, they're known for their, you know, arresting design, the sort of bravura editorial decision making. Is it a bit of a delicate balancing act when it comes to changes? Is the readership rather conservative, small c conservative, when it comes to that?
Yes, I think it's probably similar as in other countries as well. The Tide famously had a beautiful, I would say, beautiful redesign quite a while ago, probably a few years now. Although it was really innovative, it was very beautiful for minimalists at that time. There were quite a few of the old readers who said, oh, we don't really like that. And I think you always have these kind of people who say, oh, we are used to different things. And the same with the Spiegel. With the Spiegel, it coincided with being quite a bit of trouble at the Spiegel. As you know, recently they had an editor-in-chief who they bullied for quite a while. He was maybe an unlucky choice, but then finally he left, and now they have a new team at the helm. And these old editor-in-chief, he already changed the newspaper a bit, and it's now changing again. And they actually gradually quite revolutionise it. And I have to say, I quite like it. It looks more beautiful, it looks more elegant, and they have interesting features. Spiegel never used to have comments, and now they do. And they have some kind of columns and opinion pieces. So that adds a flavour, and I think it very much reflects that, of course, all these papers fight against declining circulation. Actually, Zeit, interestingly, doesn't say they had an increase in circulation recently.
We like a nice good news story when it comes to print numbers. Benedict, what about that balancing act within this sort of French scene? Is it a delicate balancing act when it comes to making changes? The readership, you know, they know what they like. They're well served in France, aren't they, with a terrific range. Is it quite a delicate act when it comes to, you know, handling changes, whether that's editorial direction or the design of the titles themselves?
It certainly is. I would make a very big distinction between the newspapers, so the dailies, as some people call them, around the world, and weeklies. There is a very distinct division between the two. Of course, Le Monde, Le Figaro, Libération, world-famous newspapers and dailies with great traditions, all under huge financial pressure. But in fact, they are not the most read at all. Compared to the Anglo-Saxon world, they are actually hardly read in a sense. They just have a bit like, I would say, France and the UK on the UN Security Council as permanent members, an exponential geopolitical strategic weight. But the weeklies are actually a real passion of the French. So they are terribly well read. One of the ones, I'll just single one out, we can't, let's not overdo it, but Le Nouvel Obs, which used to be called Le Nouvel Observateur, then it became Le Nouvel Obs, and the last few months it's become L'Obs, and it's a well-known left-wing magazine. It has had to undergo a radical redesign because it was just bleeding readers.
Well, David, let me ask you a little bit about the marketplace. I don't know if this is demonstrated by any of the other titles you have there. Is it the same? Is it this battleground, both for readership, but you know also politically, because it is quite a fragmented scene, as Benedict was saying?
Yeah, I would say the Italian kind of weekly press scene is very entrenched, obviously left, right. So I've got the two kind of rivals here, the Espresso and Panorama, and they kind of battle each other every week. It's quite astonishing just how kind of in Espresso you might have one story and on the same, I don't know if editors are kind of colluding about who.
Surely not.
Yeah, but that happens often. But as Benedict was saying, that kind of faithfulness, that faith in the reader is really striking in Espresso. This opening letter from the editor expresses, you know, a new format for the newspaper, for the weekly, but we're still faithful. We still have a pact with our dear readers 60 years on. So there's this real kind of connection with your reader that I don't think really exists so much this side of the channel. I think that, you know, people read Espresso and they always will. And, you know, it's probably because their parents did. And it still has a kind of youthful readership. You know, you'll still see Espresso at the beach. It's a kind of weekend reading that you want to catch up on the weekly sort of news and cycle in a much kind of more digestible way than perhaps a daily newspaper, a daily website. You know, there's so much to trawl through. I think it's actually a successful, struggling, yes, because it's print and people don't want to invest so much in that product anymore. But I think a very successful product and way of delivering news.
Well, it's interesting that people's political proclivities might change from their parents' generation, but maybe some of their reading habits don't. Imke, perhaps we'll just finish with you. Are there any other... You've got a raft of titles. There's a reassuring rustling of print and pages. Any other sort of broad observations you'd have? I mean, in terms of looking at the German scene, we're talking about this fragmentation. People are quick to acknowledge that, but it's in rude health, clearly. And are there any other titles you have there that, I guess, demonstrate its... its healthy general constitution?
It is actually interesting to see the Stern, who again went through a rough patch over the last years, and again they dismissed their editor-in-chief and have a new one. And I have the impression, I'm not entirely sure the figures already stand up to it, but it seems to go back a bit to the tradition that the Stern was known for, having beautiful reportages with absolutely fantastic pictures. And Stern was well known for having really very good photography in it.
Thank you very much. There, I'm afraid we must leave it. That was Benedicte Pavio from France 24, Imke Hemkel from Die Zeit, and Monocle's own David Pleasant. Thanks to you all. And that does indeed bring us to the end of this 133rd edition of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. The show is produced by David Pleasant and edited by Claire Urban. Comments or queries, drop us a note, info@monocle.com. And don't forget to join us at the very same time next Saturday. If you're missing us before then, tune in again via monocle.com, or you can listen via iTunes or SoundCloud. Until next time, though, it's goodbye.